I was listening to that in the intermediate in between there. That song is such a jam.
Over Me. It is. It really is. I love it. I love Abbey Road. That's such a great record. Did you listen to the Moody Blues song?
Oh, you know what? I didn't actually. I should have.
Okay. All right. Well, no worries. That's okay. Yeah. You got to listen to it straight after this. And I encourage everybody to do that. It is hilarious. They clearly, in the middle of the song, they're clearly playing a kind of an Irish jig as a bit of a nod to Leary. And then it becomes this spaced out, freaked out. Zero irony. No irony. Can you take me back to the most ironic thing is the stereo sound, man. That's not even ironic. Right. It's just okay.
That wasn't ironic to them.
No, they meant it. They meant you to, whoa. You got to listen to this song about Timothy Leary while you're tripping acid, man.
Yeah. Man. He just wants us to come together, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
How about this fighting, you know?
Yeah. I guess Timmy Leary, I think he didn't like that song at first.
Like, oh, really?
Timothy Leary's dead. No, no. Can you imagine?
I could see not liking that right off the bat.
Well, let's talk about the three things that I want to talk about, and I think we'll go in chronological order, and then in between each of them let's just wrap a little bit. I talked a lot on that core, so
that was great. I mean, that was you had a plan. We got there. It was good, dude. I liked it.
Oh, I'm very glad. Yeah. First, we love you, Patreon subscribers. Thank you. Yes. Thank you for supporting the pod. Nothing plods on Art of Darkness.
Never.
Thank you for supporting it, and we appreciate your generous contributions. Please consider participating in the book club. If you can't participate, like if the hours are a wonky, because we're going to be, I think, typically doing those on like a Sunday afternoon, evening, U.S. Central time. Yeah. That may feel like you're not able to participate. And then we have fans all over the world, people who listen all over the world. There's going to be a way for you to engage with that regardless. There's going to be extra content for Patreon around each of the book readings and sessions. And we're also going to try to engender a chat in Telegram, t.me/artofdarkpod, and then also on Patreon. So whether or not you're able to participate in the live sessions, you're on our minds, and we hope you come with us on the voyage. But it's also not homework. Like, if you're just like, not much of a reader. Like, number one, if that's you, that's fine. You just do you. Number two, we're gonna be giving little kind of cliff notes about each of the books we cover, because we're just gonna talk about them a bit, and maybe you get turned on to something cool,
right?
So let's just really briefly talk about Come Together, which I've been
Come Together. I want to hear the story. I think I knew, sort of after being familiar with the song for a long time. I don't remember when I found out it was associated with Tim Leary, but certainly not my first dozen listens. I didn't know this association.
That is cool. One of mine where I think I picked up on the fact that it was about Timmy Leary just by listening to it, because when I was working at the used bookstore in Minnesota here in Minneapolis, during college, I got into this stuff and I read a lot of Leary.
I
was familiar with him, and I'm looking at the lyrics. And it's like, what is this? Spinal Cracker? He won Holy Roller. He shoot Coca-Cola. I think he did a Coca-Cola ad at one point. Possibly there, you know, and there's all these like kind of suggestions in it. Yeah.
My favorite lyric from that is, as I listened to it, I realized is he got feet down below his knees, which is just he does.
Let's read the lyrics real quick. Here come old Flat Top, he come grooving up slowly. He got Juju Eyeball, he won Holy Roller. He got hair down to his knees, got to be a joker. He just do what he please. He wear no shoe shine. He got tote, because he always wore sneakers. He wear no shoe shine. He got toe jam football. Okay. He got monkey finger. He shoot Coca-Cola. He say, I know you, you know me. One thing I can tell you is you've got to be free. Come together right now over me. He bagged production. He got walrus gumboot. He got Ono sideboard. He won spinal cracker. He got feet down below his knee. Hold you in his armchair. You can feel his disease. Come together right now over me. One more. He roller coaster, he got early warning, he got muddy water, he won mojo filter. He say 1 and 1 and 1 is 3. Got to be good looking because he's so hard to see. Come together right now.
That's a good bit too. You say 1 and 1 and 1 is 3. You got to be good looking because he's so hard to see. That's a great song.
It's a top five Beatles tune, in my opinion. Gizmodo. Pull up a chair, Beatles fans. I have a story for you. A story about politics, pot, and rock and roll, starring John Lennon and Timothy Leary. The story starts, as so many good ones do, in the 1960s. Specifically, it starts the day after Christmas in 68 when Timmy Leary was arrested in Laguna Beach, California for the possession of marijuana. All right, great. Today's story is about the Beatles. On August 8th of 69, the band released a record with John Lennon, McCartney, Harrison, and Ringo, Star Crossing Abbey Road, Abbey Road. While the album was in production, of course, Lennon was very publicly and very wonderfully protesting the war in Vietnam, the bet in for peace, right? One of them happened on June 1st, 69, and Timmy Leary was there to help. It's unclear exactly when and how, but around this time, Lennon agreed to write a campaign song for Leary's ill-fated run for governor of California against Ronald Reagan. Leary's slogan was, come together, join the party. An obvious nod to his countercultural tendencies and even an allusion to his enthusiasm for psychedelic drugs. Lennon had evidently written a version of the campaign song, but took things in a different direction when the band was in the studio recording Abbey Road. Lennon told the whole story to staff writer, to David Sheff, who the two spent 3 weeks together as part of a Playboy interview. The interview would later gain a level of infamy as it hit newsstands 2 days before Lennon's assassination. In this interview, Lennon said, the thing was created in this studio. It's gobbledygook. Come together was an expression that Leary had come up with for his attempt at being president or whatever he wanted to be. And he asked me to write a campaign song. I tried and tried, but I couldn't come up with one. But I came up with this, come together, which would have been no good to him. You couldn't have a campaign song like that, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's funny. Come Together fared much better than Leary throughout all of this. The song topped the charts in the U.S. and became an anthem of sorts for the anti-war movement. It's also served as an excellent addition to many movie soundtracks, including the blockbuster Michael Bay film Armageddon. That's a bit of a reach. How different the album version was from the campaign song remains a mystery, but Leary would later speak about the first time he heard it. He said, although the new version was certainly a musical and lyrical improvement on my campaign song, I was a bit miffed that Lennon had passed me over this way. When I sent a mild protest to John, he replied with typical Lennon charm and wit that he was a tailor and I was a customer who had ordered a suit and never returned. So he sold it to someone else.
Okay.
Very, very fun. And of course, we're gonna do Lennon. I think next year might even culminate with John Lennon. I think.
Yeah.
So who's got a lot of darkness?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's quite a story to tell. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Interesting.
Indeed. Yes. Yeah. I didn't realize even in doing this outline necessarily how far his one daughter fell. Leary's daughter committed suicide in prison.
Yeah, I had never heard that. I actually, for a while, was listening to Zach Leary, the adopted son, who I didn't realize was adopted, has a podcast that I hadn't listened to in a few years, but it was pretty good. And I hadn't heard this story about his daughter. That's really tragic.
That is tragic. Yeah, I'm looking at the LA Times right now. Oh, they want money. Leary's daughter dies. We want money too, but we're better than the LA Times. Yeah, she's gonna get more value. LA Times. Leary's daughter dies after hanging. Death. She was in custody after twice being judged mentally unfit to stand trial on charges of shooting her boyfriend. Oof. Just bad. This is from the AP News in 1990. The jailed daughter of 1960s LSD guru Timothy Leary died of an apparent suicide 2 days after she was found hanging by a shoelace from the bars of her cell. Susan Martino was found Monday, hanging herself at the Sybil Brand Institute, where she was in custody after being judged mentally unfit. Yeah. Hmm. And here's Leary. I can't talk right now. I'm upset. Yeah. Ugh. Unbelievable. Yeah, at the time,
your wife and your daughter have committed
something.
This.
Something's horribly wrong. At the time, her father said, "I'm extremely distressed about this tragic event. I am praying for the young man's continued recovery." That was the shooting. So yeah. Let's see here. In May of 89, Martina was committed to the jail's mental health unit until doctors could find her psychologically fit to stand trial. She was accused of shooting boyfriend Joel Chavira, 38, as he took a nap on December 9th, 1988. He survived the attack and told officers he found Martino holding a gun in the kitchen of her Glendale home. Chavira, who was hospitalized briefly, told police Martino denied shooting him. The woman's daughter also said she had not fired the shot. So kind of mysterious and strange, but anyway, yeah.
She probably did it.
I think so.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, so we've got two more bits and bobs about Leary to cover here on the After Dark. Is there anything else about this period or what we just, can we just talk, you know, fun fact, the episode, which I've already dropped is, cause I do posts so fast. I'm lightning quick. I got it down. I got a system. I got a system, Brett.
That's good.
It's exactly 4 hours and 20 minutes long. Well, not exactly. Oh. It's 4 hours and 20 minutes.
Nice. Perfect. Dude. That's perfect. That's hilarious.
What could it mean? Not intentional, not on purpose. That was definitely, I don't even have a timer here.
I don't know. When we're recording them, we're sort of a 5 to 10 minute guess, I would say, in terms of when we actually hit record. So.
Yeah, fun.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, what do you, I mean, is there anything you're dying to say? Anything? Any
well,
thoughts?
Gosh, I mean, there's so many different ways this can go. I mean, I like doing this one because I know a lot about Ram Dass, actually, and less about Tim Leary. I spent a lot of time listening to Ram Dass, and a lot of what Ram Dass talks about is his own life. So you end up kind of knowing the general Ram Dass picture. So it's cool to get... They're to me, those two represent there's a spiritual side to this whole 60s thing, you know, that's different but related to, say, the music or the film or the other things that were in the politics and the other things that were going on. And those two guys kind of represent some kind of like two sides of one coin to it. And it was really edifying for me to get the other side of that coin more filled in than I had. The Ram Dass' story is interesting, but it's like not really an Art of Darkness episode in a lot of ways. And I'm so sympathetic. I mean, I know, you know, and our audience is part of this too. Like I there's a lot of like dismissing of like the 60s, like the 60s didn't work, right? And hippiedom is, you know, just a bunch of BS. And like, I'm sympathetic to some of that too, but like, man, if you position yourself in the mid 60s, what was happening that was more interesting and full of possibility than what these guys were doing? You know, maybe it went off the rails, but you
right
know,
and it's all tied up with leftism and progressivism and the civil rights movement. So I think there's a certain segment of the audience now that would go just turn their nose up at it and go, what a disaster. Look at all these people. They destroyed the world. But I think it is worth playing devil's advocate somewhat and asking what was the hand they were dealt and what were they bucking against? And what can we, whether or not we want to co-sign the results, the fruit, or even the actions, what can we learn from Timothy Leary and from his approach. And this is a guy who he did hack the system. He got into the system and created something and really started a movement. Like, is there going to be a conflagration of something comparable to this for the now that is as potent? And where is it going to come from?
It seems hard. Yeah, it's so atomized now. It seems hard to know how that where it would come from, what side, what direction it would come from. But yeah,
yeah. Getting in the chat here, our friend Tiago in the Telegram is wondering if we'll do a Harold Bloom episode
We'd
like they
there's sort of a proto here. There's sort of a proto Art of Darkness episode on Harold Bloom out there, actually.
My old retired podcast that I don't have any time to do any longer. But that was just a pure interview show. And our friend, I'll show that link. Michael Backinson, friend of the show. Maybe we do Harold Bloom one day. I would like that, Backinson, for sure.
Yeah, going more in depth, but that would be cool because we kind of skipped across the surface of him a little bit on that. And Michael had some personal, like he'd taken a class with Harold Bloom, I believe. So
yeah, you think he took his whole year to do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's your big takeaway? How does Ram Dass contrast to Leary?
Well, Ram Dass is not a scientist. And so he doesn't, so he's not as interested in like, how can we model this into a circuit? He had no interest really in transhumanism or anything like that. In a certain way, Ram Dass isn't interested. Ram Dass and Timothy Leary would have different visions of what progress would actually mean. They overlap. You know, they're both generally more towards peace and more towards freedom and liberation, that sort of thing. But Ram Dass's thing was like, I mean, if you've heard of the Buddhist dictum of like, you know, you kind of related to like, you have all these big questions about what it all means. And the Buddha, there's a story in Buddhism of like, those whole things are like, being a human being is you've been shot with an arrow. And when you're asking those big questions, what you're doing is you're saying, well, who shot the arrow and who made the arrow and who did? And Ram Dass is like, I'm going to show you how to get the arrow out. Mm-hmm. And then once the arrow is out, then we can start thinking about all of these other things. But first, we got to get the fucking arrow out of you. And Timothy Leary. And so it was very much like Ram Dass's thing was, to me, it was very much more like, I want to try and heal you as an individual person from the trauma of being a human being. Mm. And I don't think Timothy Leary was opposed to that, but Timothy Leary's was sort of like, eventually as it evolved, was like, yeah, we could do that by like colonizing space or something. Whereas I think Ram Dass is more like, yeah, man, what if you just sat quietly, really quietly for a long time? What would that do? Yeah, there's a Venn diagram. They overlap, but I think, you know, the methods are maybe a little bit different. But I mean, Ram Dass did as much acid as Timothy Leary did, for sure. He was a huge advocate of it for years. Mm-hmm. So, and never really turned away from it either. It was just sort of like mellowed personally on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll get to the second part of the After Dark here, and we're going to talk about Charlie Manson. And this is from a rather damning article in The Nation that is quite anti-Leary.
Okay.
And it's talking about the biography. It's a book review that editorializes really heavily, saying, no scene in the book captures that lost hope better than the lost hope of the 60s, I assume, better than an encounter between Leary and Charles Manson, who occupied an adjacent room in solitary confinement at Folsom Prison in the mid-1970s. Compared with Manson, Timothy Leary was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The transcription of their conversations comes from Leary's own writings and therefore isn't particularly reliable, but it still illuminates. Manson: we were all your students, you know. You had everyone looking up to you. You could have led the people anywhere you wanted, and you didn't tell them what to do. Leary: I didn't want to impose my realities. The idea is that everybody takes responsibility for his nervous system, creates his own reality. Anything else is brainwashing. Manson: that was your mistake. No one wants responsibility. Everyone wants to be told what to do, what to believe, what's really true and really real. Oh man.
This reminds me of some of the like when you were reading some of the bits that Leary was recounting in his biography, when he actually quotes like, they said this and I said this, you're like, I don't know that you remember it that well, first of all. And second of all, you kind of set this up a little conveniently theatrically, like, you know what I mean? It's like, and then I filled more champagne. I gave her more champagne. And then she told me that we were all, you know, it's like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it is true in the gist, though. Maybe he is being honest in the gist.
What's saying here, Manson was surprised and found it difficult to understand why Leary had given people LSD without trying to control them.
right.
Oh, geez. Wow.
But to me, that's points in Leary's favor, you know, if we're adding up merits and demerits, that's merits.
Unreal. I'm sure there's more in this book. And if you wanted to read these are easy to find. Apparently, at one point, Manson said to Leary, "They took you off the street so that I could continue with your work." Well, yikes.
That's scary. Oof. Yeah. Yeah. You do, though, wonder, like, you know, I mean, Manson famously used LSD to, like, manipulate people into committing these murders, right? And if you are Tim Leary sitting there, you do have to, there has to be a second where you're like, am I doing the right thing here? Like, is this, should I be telling people to drop acid, or am I, like, opening Pandora's box? Because Charles, whatever you think about psychedelics, you open it is a sort of Pandora's box in a way, and one of the things that flies out is Charles Manson.
100%.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah. They never saw each other. They were both in solitary directly next to one another, which is such a fascinating dynamic. Hey, yeah. Timmy.
Yeah.
How are you doing? I'm fine. How are you? Timothy said that he was never afraid because he knew that Manson wasn't a murderer.
Right.
Manson wasn't the murderer himself. So that must have been
right.
There's an interview that he did, I believe, when he was in Folsom. Timothy Leary at Folsom Prison. Mm-hmm. You can find it online.
Oh.
And it's like a solid hour-long interview, and he's in prison. And I think his wife was there and kind of behind it, and they were trying to, you know, basically beg for his freedom. And he kind of knew he was going to get out too, that when the administration would turn, he would get out. Yeah. Well, so.
Yeah, here, we don't. Yeah. The country prides itself on not having political prisoners, right? So.
Sure. Yeah,
so I don't know.
Yeah. Right. 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 Well, yeah, please. Just. Oh, God. Right. All right. So. let's talk about his last words, and then let's wrap for just a little bit longer before we shut this one down, because we could just go on and on. His last coherent words came about 6 hours before he died. "Why?" Leary suddenly blurted out. There was a long silent pause, and then he said much more softly, "Why not?"
Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
Why not?
That's excellent.
It's very zen.
Yeah.
It's very, very, very zen. I think there might be.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like Timmy Leary, doesn't it? I wonder if this book. This book is very interesting. This one on sex. Let me read just a little bit. "In the future, the wearing of cyber clothing will be as conventional as the wearing of body covering clothing. To appear without your platonic gear would be like showing up in public stark naked." Left your phone at home.
Mm-hmm.
"A new global language of virtual signals, icons, 3D pixels would be the lingua franca of our species, peach emoji. Instead of using words, we shall communicate in movie clips selected from the jungles of images stored on our wrists."
No, we won't.
The local verbal languages will, of course, remain for intimate non-platonic communication. Nothing from our rich, glorious past will be eliminated. Well, maybe he's wrong there. "When we extend our minds and power our brains, we shall not abandon our bodies nor our machines. We will drive cars as we now ride horses, for pleasure. We will develop exquisite bodily expressions, not to work like efficient robots, but to perform acts of grace." The main function of the human being in the 21st century is imagineering and electronic reality fabrication. to learn how to express, communicate, share the wonders of our brains with others. And that's from The Delicious Grace of Moving One's Hand. And the next chapter is called Electronic Sex. So he really got into this stuff, and he was into it. Clearly some of this stuff is reprinted from Chaos. Very interesting. Sure. Dude.
No, it's interesting. And I mean, he's sort of right in the, he's right in, but he has it similar. He has a, again, like we were saying, I said in the main episode, he's got like this unbridled optimism for all of this stuff. And I think that is fundamentally sort of like the progressive mentality, right? Is that like basically all change is good. And that's, I feel like when you're standing at 2022, you got to be a little skeptical of that, right? You have to, no matter what your political orientation, I think you got to sit there and go, I don't know if everything needs to be changing constantly all the time.
It's that business about icons and logos and everything is just so right on.
Yeah, he's nailing a lot of that. I mean, he definitely saw a lot of the details coming.
Yeah, for real. It's just so interesting to think about the kind of brain that would make the intersection or the leap from the acid culture to futurism and high tech.
Yeah.
It's very, very curious.
Yeah. You know, there's a, he's not alone in that. I mean, he's articulating it really well, but there's a whole, I mean, the whole supposedly like in the sort of advent of the personal computer as a modality of this whole thing, there were a lot of those people were acid heads.
Of course. Jobs. Yeah. Oh, and the Jobs episode is going to be a banger. Hey, just before we go, because I felt like I cut short on the business about our friend Charlie. I'm gonna read a couple of pages here because this is too good. Okay. And we promised it. This is from the biography. Tim later wrote, "This was it, the indisputable, undeniable Dantean bottom. Even in solitary confinement." Dantean bottom, that sounds like a BDSM move or like a character, like a part you do.
Like that.
Yeah. Even in solitary confinement, Tim was not alone for long. A young blonde trustee soon swung open the metal corridor door outside Tim's cell and welcomed him to Folsom by asking if he would like something to smoke. A moment later, he handed Tim a pack of Bugler rolling papers and a white envelope filled with tobacco, a gift from a convict named Charlie, who was his nearest neighbor. Charlie also wanted to know if Tim took sugar and cream with his coffee and whether he liked honey. Tim said he did, sent his thanks to Charlie, and rolled himself a cigarette. As Tim watched the smoke curl up through the shaft of sunlight outside his cell, the trustee returned with four paperbacks from Charlie, The Teachings of the Compassionate Buddha by E.A. Burt, In Search of the Miraculous by P.D. Ouspensky, our Gurdjieff friend, The Teachings of Don Juan by Carlos Castaneda, who we're doing next year, and The Master and the Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov. He also gave Tim a cardboard cup of organic honey, a box of graham crackers, and white envelopes filled with coffee, sugar cubes, and powdered cream. Whoever Charlie was, he had welcomed Tim to Folsom in style. Unable to see one another, prisoners in 4A communicated by talking through the air shafts. It was not long before Tim heard a voice in the darkness. "This is the bottom of the pit. Nobody gets out of here. It is bliss here," the voice added. "I have been watching your fall, Timothy. LSD is like the invention of the wheel, gunpowder, and the Chinese." Tim realized that his next door neighbor was Charlie Manson. Tim's other neighbor was Geronimo Pratt, a Black Panther who would spend 27 years in jail before his conviction for murder was overturned. "I began to understand," Joanna recalled, "that everything the Bureau of Prisons did was completely calculated. They put him together to inform on one another and also for manipulation purposes and to blow people's minds." In August of 1969, Manson, then 36 years old, had ordered his extended hippie family to slaughter seven innocent people. Okay, we know. And here's Manson. "I knew you'd end up here," Manson told Tim. "I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time, man. Do you know where..." I had to do it. "Do you know where we really are?" In a voice that Tim found cocky and somewhat patronizing, Manson said, "This is eternity, brother. This is the end of the line. No one ever gets out once they've been here. This is forever." "Hey," Tim said, Did you send me the bugler and the food? Thanks. It's my pleasure. Manson replied, his voice so low and assured that it reminded Tim of a fundamentalist minister. I love everyone and try to share what I have. I've been wanting to talk to you for years. Our lives would never have crossed outside, but now we have plenty of time. We were all your students. You know, you had everyone looking up to you. You could have led the people anywhere you wanted. When I got out of jail in 65, there were millions of kids cut loose from the old lies, just waiting to be told what to do. And you didn't tell them what to do. That's what I could never figure out. You showed everyone how to create a new head, but you never gave them the new head. Why didn't you? I've wanted to ask you that for years. That was the point, Tim replied. I didn't want to impose my realities. The idea is that everybody takes responsibility for his nervous system, creates his own reality. Anything else is brainwashing. That was your mistake. No one wants responsibility. Everybody wants to be told what to do, what to believe, and what's really true and really real. And you've got answers for them? It's all in the Bible, man. Prison gives you time to read the Bible. I figured it all out. Know why everything went wrong? The women. They got scared and forced all these laws and morals on men. What does the Bible say in Revelations? They are the cause of evil. Evil has to be killed. Only a few are to be saved. Tim asked,
whoa,
how do you feel, Charlie? I feel bad. I got the rawest deal in 2,000 years. Sure, I laugh at it most of the time, but the pigs got me good. I can't write letters. I can't get visits. They got me completely cut off. They really want to kill me. I can feel it. The murder in their hearts. My trial was a farce. It's stupid. I play out their script, act out their Bible, take the whole thing on myself. All their feelings of evil and murder, all the sins of mankind. Climb on the cross for them. And nobody understands. Nobody understands what I'm doing for them. Do you understand about Sirhan Sirhan? I recognize that this is a very Christian country, Tim replied, and that every convict is forced to play Christ. But to tell you the truth, I don't have much to do with that. I'm an Irish Catholic pagan, oldest God game going. Let's go on just a little bit because it's too good.
Yeah.
When they talked again the next morning after breakfast, Manson had more questions. He wanted to know what Tim called the moment of truth when you took acid and your entire body dissolved into nothing but vibration, space and time fused, and it all became just pure energy. Bouncing the question right back at him, Tim asked Manson what he had found there. Nothing, Manson said. Whoa. Like death must be. Isn't that what you found? Having fielded this question many times before, Tim told Manson that was a trip someone else had laid on him. It's the moment when you are free from biochemical imprints, he said, you can take off from there and go anywhere you want. You should have looked for the energy fusion called love. It's all death, Manson insisted. It's all love, Tim responded. I hang on to death, Manson said. I live by life, Tim replied. So that's a bit, he's giving himself a little bit of a heroic bit of writing there, but still very telling and very interesting insight, I think, into both Manson and Timmy.
Yeah. That's I did not know that those two sat next to each other. Like, that's very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 50,000 people. There's only no more than 50,000 people alive at any given time.
And around 70 of them right now are our patrons on Patreon.
Yeah, pretty good. That's pretty good.
There you go. We're building the great arc of the podcast arc. Once again, thank you so much. Please support the show. Go 5-star everywhere if you haven't. Come to join us in the Telegram and do subscribe to YouTube too, even if you don't frequent YouTube, because it helps our numbers.
We're trying to eventually,
you know, monetize that, do ads. We're probably going to start throwing some ads up front at the beginning of the show next year, but it's going to be very light. It won't be anything that interrupts the flow of the show or anything like that. But definitely your support right now is helping at least cover the cost of these books, which are accumulating.
Yeah, it's not insignificant. Yeah.
No, we really appreciate it. And whatever level you're at, we're very grateful. And thanks for listening. Brad, any final thoughts on good old Timmy?
No, not at all. It's just not particularly. That was really cool, Kevin. Thanks for taking me through that and I learned a lot. That's great.
All we are saying is donate to Art of Darkness. I don't know. All we are saying that's a good song for a campaign.
Yeah.
That would be quite good. So I could see why he asked him to write his campaign song, but for man, sure. Come Together is a banger.
Come Together Over Me. Though, you know, the sexual innuendo to that was obvious to me when I was like 8 years old. I was like, what? Come Together Over Me? That's pretty weird.
Bye.
Right. Bye-bye.